Hello and welcome to FOFOP. Yeah, FOFOP, the occasional podcast that I do. Anyway, this is back to the original FOFOP lineup. Myself and Dave Anthony. Dave and I hadn't been in the same place for a fair while, as we work out in this podcast. But we decided that we would get together over Skype and the magic of the World Wide Web, and we would record a podcast. So this is it. Hope you enjoy it. If you are a fan of FOFOP, I would say just subscribe to it through your whatever podcast app you use because, you know, they come out occasionally, but you might miss them along the way if you're interested in it. So, I have another podcast, of course. It's called TOFOP. That one comes out weekly if you like AFL football, but you don't like intelligent conversations about it. I have a podcast called Two Guys, One Cup that I also do with Charlie. And I have a more serious podcast, which is called Philosophy, where I interview people about their philosophies of life. So there you go. That's the plug for all those. The reason that I'm actually doing a tiny little intro here is because if you are in Darwin, I am coming your way for the Darwin Festival. I'm going to be doing my Willegal show, which is the show about being arrested on the way to Wagga Wagga. Not touring a lot this year, but I've got the occasional show, every now and again. And Darwin is one of those. So it's probably going to sell out pretty quick. So if you're in Darwin or nearby and you want to come and see the show, it's now on sale. There you go. All right. I hope you enjoy this episode. Cheers.
The following episode of FOFOP is classified MA. It contains some coarse language, some nudity, drug references, a sex scene, time travel, terrible Batman impersonations, a Charlie Clausen pronounced Clausen-shaped hole, and mild coarse language. FOFOP advises that the program is not suitable for persons under the age of 15, and minors must be accompanied by an adult guardian or priest. This is John Deek speaking.
Hello and welcome to FOFOP. I'm Will Anderson, my very irregular podcast, but it limps on, much like the movie finale of the TV show Deadwood. That's taken a long time to actually get there, but I'm hoping we'll be worth the wait. We're back. This is essentially your core FOFOP. I welcome guest Charlie number one, Dave Anthony. Hello, Dave.
Thank you. It's been a while. I looked to see when the last time you recorded one, and it's been months.
Yeah, and then it was months before that, but I don't even know the last time we did one together. Did you look at that?
No, I actually didn't. It's got to be like a year or something.
Yeah, Michael's gonna have to look that up. But it's going to have been a long time since we've last sat down and done a FOFOP together. But October 31st, 2018. There you go. So it's been 6 months. 6 months.
That's a whole new level of FOFOP I'm not used to.
Oh, the idea.
Information popping up on the screen. It's like we have some sort of AI help now.
We should point out that, yes, I am in Australia. I'm in Melbourne, Australia. You are in?
Just outside of Los Angeles, California.
And what room of your house are you in, if you don't mind me asking? Because I haven't been to your house. And when you first came onto the Skype that we're talking over today, it did look a little bit like a bunker. You were in the dark.
Okay.
You were surrounded by books that could have been all filled with conspiracies. It did feel you might have gone full Dave Anthony.
Yeah, no, there's definitely conspiracy books behind me. It is the game room, which is my son has taken over. It was going to be my office, but it is now a 100% game room.
The game room based on, of course, the Michael Douglas movie, The Game.
That's right. Yeah. It's a theme. My son loves that movie. He loves it.
How are you, sir? We decided we needed to, because we haven't been in the same country for, since probably October 31st, 2018. So we decided that we should do one of these anyway over the magical powers of the World Wide Web. And how are things in the United States of America?
I mean, I'm fine. The country I live in is burning to the ground. Literally and figuratively.
So what should we start with? Because the irony is that, you know, about 7 years ago, you and I sat in a hotel room at the Standard Hotel, I believe it was, in West Hollywood. And we recorded, barely recorded, a podcast that was about the subject of climate change. And it was a podcast that was never released, partly because of the audio quality, but partly because essentially about half an hour into a podcast, two middle-aged men just were so sad talking to each other alone in a hotel room. Like, I imagine there's been immense levels of sadness that have happened between two men alone in a hotel room at the Standard, but I don't think they've ever been surpassed by the depths of despair that we encountered that day, and yet it feels like in the time since then, the world has caught up to the podcast.
It ended like the end of the Blair Witch, which is just you in a corner gently banging your head on a wall. I think we have very much caught up to the conversation that we had on that podcast. I wonder if I could release it now. It wouldn't even be nice to listen to, but yeah, it's, We live in the two countries that are apparently going to deny this is happening.
Well, it's fine in our country because we had an election where one of the parties said it's definitely happening, and the other one who was like, "Nah, I reckon coal's pretty good," and they were like, "Well, at last, we've got a real good choice. We've got a clear choice between the party that's stuck their fingers in their ears and gone la 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 coal, literally led by a guy." For the Americans listening, and you can Google this to see that it's true, who one day brought a lump of coal into the Australian Parliament and sat in the Parliament holding his lump of coal versus a guy who was like, yeah, climate change, I reckon, is a thing we should do something about. And Australians voted for the coal guy.
I mean, it's just... I think we all had faith that other countries would do the right thing and America would be the outlier. But then again, I was reading about it, and like your Shorten, that's his name, Shorten, yeah. Great name for a political leader. He's saying it's happening and that you need to have a climate emergency, but at the same time, he's supporting the opening of the biggest coal mine in Australia. So it's stuff like that where it's like, well, what do you actually mean?
Right. So the leader is Scott Morrison. He's the guy who won. He was up against Bill Shorten. So
yeah.
Bill Shorten, Bill, it turns out, is a terrible name for a political leader who's going to run on higher taxes because all the ads were just plays on the bill Australia can't afford. So, yeah. Now, what you might be seeing there is the Prime Minister of Australia, Scott Morrison, or as he likes to be called, ScoMo. That's true.
He prefers that you call
him ScoMo.
Yes, it can't be.
No.
Okay, I'm gonna hang up now.
So, his name's Scott Morrison. He represents the widest electorate in Australia per capita. He is a member of the Pentecostal Church. You know, the sort of ones who think you get rich if you know God blesses you by giving you money. And he. He's the guy who brought a lump of coal to Parliament. He's an ex-advertising guy, and so he's all about branding. So he's not Scott Morrison, he's ScoMo, and he was up against a guy called, the Prime Minister of our country. Like, when I met him, he literally said, "Call me ScoMo." And I said, "I will not, sir. You are the Prime Minister of our country. And as much as I disrespect your policies, I don't disrespect the position enough to call you Prime Minister ScoMo." But anyway, it turns out that worked, and he won. Make Australia great again.
But your guy also cried about his mom, so that wasn't great.
Okay. Well, no, he's not my guy either. I don't like Bill Shorten either. Like,
Is he like the version of a centrist in America, like a Hillary Clinton, a Joe Biden? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so like I think probably even our right-wing party, you know, the Liberal National Party, the ones who've retained government, I still think in a general sense, for the things that we think in Australia are sort of universal rights, like Medicare and these sort of things. Both of our parties on probably 70, 80% of the things are still probably to the left of the Democrats. in the US.
Right.
Right. Because, right. you know, your whole system is further, you know, away to the right than ours is. However, right. the same problem exists in that both of those parties have become often indistinguishable centrist parties when it comes to, you know, economic rationalism and, you know, capitalism and all these sort of things. You yeah. know, so absolutely. Like, if you are a person whose politics are, you know, to the left of, you know, what is considered that centrist mainstream opinion, then you would not vote for either of those parties. And I have only ever voted for one of those parties once, and it was in 1994 yeah. or something like that. So, you know, to give you an indication.
Sure, that makes sense. Well, congratulations on the result. Yeah, I think America is fucked, and I think that Trump is going to win again. And I just think we're fucked.
Well, after what just happened in Australia, like, I mean, I it's hard for me to doubt that that is true, because what it looks like from afar, you know, with what's happening in the US, is that remember before? I mean, he told us this, you know, like we can't even complain in a way. Because it's like one of those movies where you realize that in the first scene, a character said something that, like, there's a famous scene in Shaun of the Dead where they have, like, a little conversation in the pub at the start and they explain what their night's going to be. And it's actually uh-huh. quite clever because it's also the entire plot of the rest of the movie. So if you look back on it, yeah. the way they describe what their night out's going to be actually tells you what's going to happen for the rest of the movie. Remember when before the election, Donald Trump said he could just shoot someone in the street and no one would care? He said it. And all he's yeah. done since then is prove that is absolutely true.
100%. It's 100% true. He literally could do it now, and his fans would be like, and they're fans.
Yeah.
They would be like, oh, yeah, that's cool. That was pretty cool. He shot a guy. I mean, he really shot him. It was really awesome. I mean, the real problem is that the Democrats, I don't know what they stand for, or they don't stand for anything. They still won't take firm positions on things, and they still. So a good example is what we were just talking about with the you've got Shorten, who's saying he's climate change is real, and then also the party is supporting a mine opening, a coal mine, huge coal mine. Mm. Well, like they all say, we need Medicare for all, which is universal health care, which would be a government run system. And then they say that, and then they go, but everybody can keep their private insurance. And you're like, okay, so that's not the thing. So they say things and the meaning is completely different. And then when you try to run a campaign on that kind of shit, it's just gobbledygook. And then you have a guy over there just saying, Muslims are bad. And everyone goes, well, that guy is saying something that's real.
Okay, so tell me what the state of, because what we're seeing from over here is that there's a whole bunch of, you know, Democrats or, you know, people who are lining themselves up to run against Donald Trump in the next election.
Yeah.
So give us a bit of a call of the card, because for in Australia, a lot of those names aren't people that we really know, unless you're a person who's delving into the world of American politics. But I imagine that most Australians would probably know Joe Biden, and they would know Bernie Sanders, but they probably don't know a heap of the other people.
And that's really the same thing with most Americans, honestly. So here's how it breaks down. Bernie Sanders is the most popular politician in America by far. So if he runs, he has a really good chance of winning. But he's not a socialist, but he's you know, he leans socialist. So that really upsets the Democratic Party, because they are, as Nancy Pelosi said, we're capitalists. So what's happening is, or appears to be happening, is that the Democrats are scared Bernie Sanders will get enough of the electoral votes in each state to win the nomination. And they want it to go to the convention without him outright winning the nomination, because then they can take it away from him. So what it seems like they're doing is running a popular politician in each state that has no chance of winning the election, but can take enough votes away from Bernie in each state to make it so that he doesn't win the primary outright and they have to vote for it at the convention.
Okay, have these guys heard of Donald Trump? Are they not aware he's the guy they're meant to be?
I 100% believe at this point that the Democrats would rather have Donald Trump in power than Bernie Sanders.
So, okay, explain to me why that is.
Because he's going to undermine everything that they believe in, which is essentially neoliberalism. They want to continue the money train rolling in Washington. They all have really nice houses, and they send their kids to private school, and they make tons of money. And this is also, there's consultants that, I mean, the amount of money that's being made in Washington is just mind-boggling. It used to be 30 years ago, the most expensive counties around the country were spread around New York, L.A., San Francisco. Now the seven most expensive housing prices and everything else counties are around Washington, D.C., because it's just money is just flowing in. So they want to keep the money train going. And they know if someone like Bernie Sanders gets elected, his whole thing is like blow that up. So they'd rather have a bad guy in power than a guy that takes away their ability to make money.
But it's, so here's what I don't understand about that is that it's not like Bernie would be able to change everything anyway. Like, unless, no. You know, he might be able to come in and influence things in a different direction and, you know, make, but the changes that he's talking about, some of them are such big changes that, you know, even if he got two terms and, you know, I think in his second term, he'd be like, what, 125?
so, yeah.
But like, even if he gets two terms, like, it's not like America is suddenly going to become like a socialist country. It's more right. about the implementation of some of those, you know, major policies or, you know, turning things, at least kind of stopping some of the leaks in the boat more than anything, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And then there's, you know, he can do what's called executive orders and he can change stuff that way, which they're scared of. But yeah, he can't make big change. But what he would do is, I mean, since I was a child, the argument has always been, you got to go to the middle, you're losing election. There's no way you can go left. What he would do is blow that argument to smithereens, and then they have a problem. Because then their argument for the past 40 years no longer exists, and that's the real fear. Once an actual guy that far on the left gets elected, they can't do the lesser of two evils thing anymore.
Well, the other thing really is fucked. That if you're playing the game of we've, because I understand intellectually, there's some sense in the idea of you have two opposing parties, like at its purest, at its best, right? You have two sort of, you know, competing ideologies. We're all agreeing on the same thing. We want to educate people. We want to get people to have healthcare, blah, blah, blah. And then you have two competing ideologies over how you best do that. And through the debate between those two ideologies, you come up with an idea that probably is going to, for most people, be the best sort of compromise idea. Okay, I get the...
Yeah.
When you explain it like that, it seems pretty reasonable, right? And the idea of meeting in the middle in that situation, you go, okay, well, that makes sense to a certain degree. But the problem is, if you're playing the game of meeting in the middle and only one of the sides has agreed to that game,
that's right.
They keep moving to the right, and the other party's like, well, we have to meet in the middle, so we have to move more to the right. They're not playing the same game. Stop playing let's meet in the middle. That's like me saying, hey, we should meet in the middle, you and I, and then I actually move further away from America.
I mean, 100%. I mean, it's a great example is the healthcare plan we have now, right? Obamacare, which he ran on Medicare for all, a government plan, Medicare for all. And then as soon as he got in office, he was like, yeah, it's going to be too hard. Let's just take the Republican plan from 1996 and we'll do that.
Because that so is it's now, a right wing. That's now middle ground for us.
That's their middle ground. Their middle ground is literally like, remember what the Republicans did 15 years ago? Let's do that. And you're like, what's... I go, so you're literally just admitting that the country is moving to the right. Like, that's, you're just saying... So that's like, that's their whole ball game. And people are done with it. They're just fucking done.
So okay. So run us through these who these people are. Like, who's most likely at this stage if Bernie... If their Burn Bernie plan works... Who is like,
and I think it will.
Yeah.
I think it's weird because, you know, our, what are we, 18 months away or some shit? Like our election system is mind-bogglingly stupid. the fact that we have an election this long is just... So, in the past, you can't make the call at this point. Because, like, Barack Obama was nobody at this point before he won. And Hillary was a shoo-in, you know? Biden is never going to win. He's a terrible campaigner. For my entire life, he's run like four times, and it's always just a joke, the shit he says, and you're just like, oh, God, Biden's saying something. He'll never win.
Also, it seems to me, and this is observing from afar, because I'm sure that for those who follow American politics, you are perhaps more aware of some of these things, but essentially from afar, Biden at the end of Obama had such a fun reputation. Like, his reputation was kind of just like, he's Obama's mate, and look how good friends yeah. they are. And, like, it's like reverse driving Miss Daisy. And, like, you know, look, they're always fun. And Joe, everybody loves Joe. And then he's running for yeah. president, and you're like, wow, he's some, like, creepy old dude that keeps saying really, really stupid things about economics and the environment and stuff. What are you doing, man?
Yeah, he's yeah, I mean, his nickname was Gaff Joe because he made so many gaffes. But... He is such an idiot because he had a legacy. He was right. just going to be the sidekick guy that everybody liked, and he's just burning it down. Like, the shit that's coming out about that guy is just insane, and it'll never stop. I mean, they just found a new video today of him, like, saying how great this Confederate general was, and all, and you're just like, it just never ends with him. It's,
well, also,
it's relentless.
Like, just even people advising him, because when he got, like, you know, in trouble for his sort of touchy-feelyness, or, you know, perhaps something more serious than that. But whatever it is, whatever the truth at the heart of it is, he then jokes about it publicly. Yeah. I'm like, hang on, who's advising you? Louis C.K.? Like, too soon, man. This is not the approach.
He is one of the, I think he's of the silent generation, so he's older than boomers, and they have this complete lack of understanding of the internet. It was the same thing that happened with the Clinton campaign. Like, it's like they don't realize old videos exist, and everything they say can be immediately undermined with something they used to have said. And he just has no idea that he thinks that if he says it, CNN's going to report it, or MSNBC, and then it's going to go away. And he doesn't realize it just takes on a life of its own, and it doesn't stop.
But it's not even he's like, you know, the old stuff that they're trawling through and finding. It's the new stuff that's just coming out of his mouth now. Like, it's not... They don't have to go back in history. Like, he's just going on TV, like live TV, and going, I don't reckon the problem is the super rich people. I know a lot of super rich people, and they're pretty cool. Like, no, it's called... the problem is definitely the super rich people. Maybe not them personally, but the system that has allowed them to be so super rich is the exact problem.
It's, yeah. I mean, talk about not being able to read the room. Yeah. It's just completely insane.
Well, it's fine to read the room he's hanging out with all these super rich people.
Rich people. I know the first day of his campaign, he went to a fundraiser and met with a bunch of healthcare guys who want to keep Medicare for All off the table. He just got a bunch of checks. You're like, what are you, fucking stupid? Yeah, so that's why he has no chance. I just think he's, everyone's like, I know him, so I'll say yes right now. But once... I think Elizabeth Warren has a really good chance.
So tell me about Elizabeth Warren, because, again, she's probably the next most familiar to international audiences, but without really necessarily knowing her background.
So back in the day, she was a Republican.
Oh.
Like in the 80s, early 90s maybe.
Oh, so she was an 80s Republican, which means that if she's a 2019 Democrat, it's a pretty... she actually holds the exact same position she always has. She didn't change. Pretty much, the party's pretty much. Changed.
I mean, yeah, kind of. So she's a capitalist, but she wants to totally reform our capitalist system to give people a fair shake. So she is, let's save capitalism. Bernie is more like, let's kind of get rid of a lot of capitalism. So she's the next step over from Bernie. And in my opinion, she's the only other acceptable candidate. After that, you get just nightmares, like mini Clintons, mini Obamas, that kind of thing. So she's, I think she was a professor economics, and she ran for Senate. She won. I think she served two Senate terms, but she's always been very anti-Wall Street. So she just attacks Wall Street relentlessly, and she's almost the only one in the Senate who does that.
So that to me seems like something that, because like as much as I think that, you know, to save some of these, you know, to save the world, and I think it is that desperate in some cases, particularly when it comes to the environment, we probably need something more drastic than that. However, if we're talking about things that are at the very least perhaps achievable, like somebody who says, okay, I'm okay with capitalism, but I recognize that capitalism, I always think that capitalism is like one of those diseases they introduce to somewhere to, like, you know, kill off the rabbit population or whatever. But then suddenly you've got like, yeah, like we don't have any rabbits anymore. But like, have you noticed there's like 9 tigers in every room? Did you notice the side effect of this thing is like really, really big tigers?
Yeah.
And to recognize that, like to be able to say the people who drive me absolutely bananas are the ones that are like, who can't accept that capitalism has flaws or that it is an imperfect system. Like capitalism is a good system from taking somewhere from like a third world economy to, you know, a more modern economy. But just because it's good at that doesn't mean it's a good way for a first world economy to sustain an economy.
Yeah. Well, then it starts eating itself, right? And it just devours itself, and then you have nothing but, you know, chaos and sorrow.
Yeah.
And eight rich guys.
Well, that's it. And 8 rich guys. Like, clearly you can just look at the evidence and go, there's something wrong with this system where there's all these people who don't have enough, and then there's just like 8 rich guys.
It's kind of mind-boggling that we live in a place, and I think both our countries in the situation right now where everyone isn't just in agreement of like, well, let's just get rid of those people. Let's just take all their money and not let them do that. It's so fucking obvious. Billionaires shouldn't exist.
There's heaps more of us than there are of them. Like, just through weight of numbers. But you know what? I was actually reading that newspaper owned by that billionaire, and he told me that it was someone else's fault. So I'm pretty sure I can trust that.
Yeah, that's the rub, isn't it? They own all the press. Yeah, weird how that worked out.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I what you're saying to me makes a lot of sense, but I read like 9 articles in this newspaper owned by that billionaire, and it didn't mention any of those things at all.
No, he doesn't. And he actually said socialism kills people.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in my opinion, the worst case scenario is Sanders or Warren doesn't win. One of the other Democrats does win, doesn't do anything for 4 or 8 years. And then what comes is worse than Trump.
So, because what Trump has opened the door to is the idea of like a competent Trump.
That's right. A very competent Trump.
Yeah.
And that's when you have Hitler, right? That's when you have a really terrifying monster. I mean, and I can see them right now. There's a guy, Tom Cotton. He's from, I think, Arkansas. There's a guy in Texas who lost an eye in the war, and Dan Crenshaw. I mean, they are straight up competent monsters.
I mean, I love the idea that this guy lost an eye in the war. Which war? Do you know which war he lost an eye in?
Iraq. The good one.
Or as he calls it, Rack, obviously. Once he... we're going back for my eye. We're invading again, this time for oil and my eye. We kill every one of those motherfuckers until I find my eye. An eye for an eye. It's in the Bible. I've read it.
God.
Do you watch the TV show Veep?
I don't. I've never watched. You know, I don't watch any comedies.
So I've been thinking about it a lot because I've been listening to your new podcast, The West Wing Thing. The West Wing Thing. And it's good. Yeah, I've been enjoying it very much. Mostly,
oh, thank you.
You in particular having a nervous breakdown about everything.
That happens a lot.
So I literally kind of, I'm just waiting for an episode where you find one thing that you can hang on to. Because what I love the most is that, you know, you used to, like, you're like somebody who's been freed from a mass delusion. Like, you know where someone wakes up and they can finally see that the emperor has no clothes? Like, this entire podcast is you just episode after episode realizing that the emperor was even more naked than you thought the emperor was. And not only is the emperor naked, but he's walking around masturbating in front of people and no one's noticing, right?
And no one's paying attention.
And
that's right.
I was thinking about it a lot when I was watching Veep and the final series of Veep, because they've done in a live action show the closest, I think, to what South Park have done in the way that they've been able to actually legitimately sort of have a genuine shot at the system itself rather than just the players within the system.
Yeah, I heard it got kind of dark at the end.
Dark. It got real dark. But dark in that way that made you very much, they showed how the next Trump, you know, the next evil Trump could come along. But also that, you know, I guess Selena Meyer's like character, like, you know, the Julia Louis-Dreyfus's character, I guess she's like a Democrat, I think, in the...
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So, but she, you know, is equally complicit in how, you know, terrible the system has become. And that's what they do with the character. It's very good.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, that's smart, right? I mean, you don't get enough of that. We have this real problem that everyone loves Obama and they don't think he did anything wrong when he was actually, in my opinion, a really bad president and set this all up. So when you hear stuff like that, you're like, well, hopefully people will start to wake up to that. But man, they really love him.
Well, I think that he's an incredibly charming person and he's a good speaker and he says a lot of the right things. And then so what we get into, you know, and both sides do this, of course, right? Which is this idea that, you know, it's like what I was saying about capitalism before. You start to become a like, well, everything about him is good. Whereas you could actually separate the person and the president from the job they do as the president or from, you know, specific aspects of, you could say Obama was good at this, this, and this, and terrible at this, this, and this. And I think that's a legitimate conversation to have.
Yeah. And it's weird that, well, that's just the place we are. Like, no one wants to have that conversation. I mean, there's some people that are and do, but they've always been more open to that kind of stuff. But there's just this giant group of people that are like, nope, he was awesome. And you're like, well, he did kill a 15-year-old with a drone, an American citizen.
Yeah, but he did it better than any other previous person could have done it.
He did do it really well.
Yeah. But this is the point, right? Like, the idea that you can criticize, like, just because, you know, now it's Trump, like, I get the idea of going, oh, I wish we had Obama again, but it doesn't excuse all the things that Obama did while he was president. Like, you know, you still have to have a legitimate conversation around what it is that you're saying, right? And the role of, you know, the use of drones or warfare or getting into wars that shouldn't be there, or, you know, not nailing to the wall the idea of a Medicare for all and giving in to, you know,
punishing the banks, you know, all that stuff.
But also this idea that somehow we believe that one person is capable or should be responsible for turning around a giant system that has been corrupted bit by bit and there are so many things in place. Like, no one could fix it and no one could be a perfect president in that situation. And if Bernie Sanders, ends up being president, there'd be the roadblocks that will be in the way of Bernie trying to do what Bernie wants to do.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
It'll be crazy. Yeah, it'll be crazy. But, you know, we have 100 million people that don't vote. I mean, that's insane. So he's the kind of guy that would wake all those people up and they'd be like, oh, someone's finally actually wants to do something for me. Because no one's had that in 40 years.
So some people complain about, the weirdest things about Trump too, which is always like, he just plays too much golf or, he doesn't spend enough time in the office. And I'm like... Yeah. Actually, they're both positives, by the way. Like,
I know when he's playing golf, I'm like, great, golf all the time. Did you hear the story about him cheating?
Yeah,
about with the guy the championship.
Yeah.
Did you hear that?
Yes.
So I'll just say it for the audience. So he has at his local golf course in Florida, there was a course championship held for all the members, and some guy won, and Trump wasn't there. So he comes down a couple weeks later and he sees the guy golfing, and the guy's golfing with like his, I think, 8-year-old kid. And Trump's like, well, you're not officially the champion because I wasn't here. And the guy's like, well, okay, that's not really how it works. And Trump's like, we're going to play the last four holes, and whoever wins the last four holes is champion. And he's like, well, I'm just actually playing with my son. And also, he's like, that's,
also not how golf works. Jimmy? Like, that's like me going up to like someone who's just run a marathon and just going, you know what, I'm going to start 70 meters out.
That's
and
right.
Once you get to 70, we're going to race. And if I beat you, I'm the marathon champion. Sorry.
That's how it works, because I wasn't here. So you really didn't win, did you?
No, I wasn't here.
So he makes a guy and his kid play. So the three of them are playing, and they get to this one hole where there's a water, what do you call it, water
hazard?
Hazard. And the kid hits it over, and his dad hits it over, and then Trump hits the ball into the water. And then he gets in his cart and drives ahead with the Secret Service guys, and the kid and dad walk up, and Trump is about to hit one of the balls that's on the green, and they go, that's my son's ball. And he goes, no, it isn't. It's my ball. And they look at the Secret Service guy and he goes, it's the president's ball.
It's the president's ball.
And then the president plays the kid's ball and wins. And now he's the champion.
I mean, they could actually find Donald Trump's ball, but it would involve them draining the swamp, which he's been incapable of doing. So.
There's something crazy. Someone was talking about it the other day, and he's so fucking crazy, but then stories like that amuse the shit out of me.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, well, because that is, there is a part of you that goes, well, that's a harmless thing for the president to be, you know, like it obsesses you. Like, you know, that you go, well, yeah, he's just clearly like this. In every single way, like every single aspect of his life is him just, you know, he got in by cheating. He's always cheated, but he lives in this delusion where, you know, it's his golf course and he's the president. So he can just play an 8-year-old kid's ball and claim it as his own and then tell the champion, I'm the champion. And he has to be because he's the president. So there's part of me that's like, oh, well, that is quite hilarious. And if nothing else, I'd encourage more of that. I reckon he should take on every champion in every sport. He should just... I would like to see Donald Trump go on a tour of like just every major sport and just go, well, I'm sorry, I'm the president. I challenge you for the title.
He just shows up and tells the Warriors he's on their team now.
Right. I'm sorry. Well, I mean, Kevin Durant's out for the finals. Trump's in. But just for the last 30 seconds of every game.
Oh, so great.
Oh, man.
Anyway, at the end of the day, he's going to tell his followers to kill everybody once he gets kicked out of office or whatever.
Well, that's the other bit, isn't it? There's a part of you that's like, I just hope that it plays out in a way that is, you do worry that however it finishes, based on what it has become now, that the end result of him either being turfed out, like, you know, you can imagine the fake news around, you know, the actual fake news around it, you know, around the cheating that was done or this and that happened, or it'll be used as an opportunity for hate groups to say, you know, black people were voting here or this was happening here or whatever, and divide people more. And then the next step on with that, as we've seen, you know, with that Australian guy in New Zealand and a few other sort of, you know, those alt-right inspired white supremacist, like, you know, terror events now, is you could just see that kicking off. Like, it's hard to know which way it ends with Trump that doesn't end in violence now.
Yeah, 100%. And the more you read about them, they are salivating to shoot people.
Yeah.
Like, they just cannot wait to kill people. Like, there was a protest in Portland, which is a lot of stuff has been going on in Portland, fights and stuff. And there's like a, I think it's called the Patriot Prayer Christians, you know, and who oppose the Antifa, whatever. And they found that they had all these weapons on the top of a parking garage because they were going to shoot down and just kill people.
Yeah, they're they're waiting, aren't they? They're just ready to go. Yeah. It's like, remember when Krusty becomes a dark stand-up comedian? Do you remember he puts his hair in his ponytail and he starts talking about he burns some money, and then Homer keeps yelling out, "Do you want us to burn our pants? Should we burn our pants?" Like, it feels to me like the alt-right is like Homer, just so desperate to burn their pants and just be waiting to get permission to burn their pants.
There's also this other crazy part to it, that the QAnon stuff, which is crazy conspiracy theory, just madness. Like, none of it makes sense.
So, do we know what it is? Can you give us a quick explanation of it?
I can't, because it doesn't. I mean, it's basically they think the deep state is trying to overthrow the government, and it's all associated with pedophilia, and it just literally, okay, the more you get into it, you're like, oh, none of this makes sense.
All right.
I think there's a lot of people in our country who are on meth.
Well, and there is, isn't there? There is everywhere. Like, in Australia, that's a massive problem too.
And I think there's just a lot of that is just people tweaking and losing their shit. And it's just seeping into the discourse and the society, and it's crazy.
That's what needs to be added to this situation, meth. Anything that aids rational decision making, it's meth. Meth. Yeah, well, if you want to think, everything's a good idea. Meth.
Well, at least we have
guns.
You can
never get off it. Meth. Why not try a drug that has a 2% chance of rehab? Meth. Do you hate your teeth? Rip them out. Meth.
Would you like to fuck for 9 hours?
No. Meth. Like, I always love all the things that they say too. It is always one of those ones where all the supposed advantages of meth, all the things they always say, oh, yeah, you can, like, fuck for 9 hours. I'm like,
why would you?
Like, in a year maybe, but like.
Are you talking about cumulative?
Right? Cum in a year.
In a row?
I'm happy with 9 hours in a year, honestly. I'm 45. My hips are bad. I can't fuck for 9 hours in a row. I'd like to be able to sleep for 9 hours in a row. That's, you got a drug for that?
God. So, yeah, I think you're right. It's just so. I think everyone's starting to cue into it, too. People are starting to realize this is going to end in violence. And all the guns, like, we're set up for it. Like, where it's just the perfect disaster.
So, what's it like in California at the moment? Because, you know, obviously, you know, it's not, California is not necessarily the rest of America when it comes to these sort of things. So, what's it like in your part of the woods?
I mean, I obviously live in a liberal enclave, I'd call it. Mm. It's not that bad. Like, we're not dealing with the abortion stuff. We're not dealing, you know, it's all pretty normal here. It's an economic bubble based on, you know, the movie industry, show business, and defense contractors. Like, that's Los Angeles. So there's just tons of money here, and it's not like what's happening in the rest of the country. It just doesn't feel remotely the same.
I'm just going to take a quick bathroom break, if that's right. I'll be back in a sec.
Yeah. There he goes. Leave the door open.
Sorry, I had a little bathroom break, Dave, because I'm an old man who can't get through an hour-long podcast these days without having to go to the bathroom.
I get it.
How are you? I haven't, we've talked a lot about America so far, and this has worked quite well. Hopefully we can do this again. Like, this was a little experiment to see if we could actually make it all work, but it seems to have worked okay. So hopefully we can have a more regular catch up. But how are you? What's going on in your world?
I can't say it. I'm just mostly doing the podcast. which I'll be doing more of.
for absolutely no other reason. Read nothing that into that. I just like podcasts. I like podcasts a lot. I just want to focus on my podcasting. I have the dollop. I have the West Wing thing. And Will, you know, if you want to catch up more often, happy to do some more Fofops. Again, for no real reason, though, just because of the pure love of podcasting and absolutely nothing else ever.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. I think you covered that off. I think everything's fine.
Yeah, so it's mostly just doing the podcast, trying to get the climate change group started, which is very close now, and watching my kid play baseball, being very disappointed in baseball as a sport.
Okay, so why are you disappointed in baseball as a sport?
So it's really weird. It's like it became the computer guys took over and everything became about stats and how to bat this way and how to do this and how to do that. And
Dave, are you talking about Moneyball?
Yeah, basically. But it seems like it's gone beyond Moneyball and it's just into computer ball. So it used to be a sport where guys would try to get hits and move around the bases and a lot of stuff's going on. And they determined that that didn't matter as much as just trying to hit a home run, and strikeouts don't matter anymore, and try to get a walk or a home run. So there's no action anymore. It's just like no one gets singles or doubles. You're trying to hit a home run. So it's just guys going up and swinging as hard as they can for a home run, and they hit a home run, and then that's like, oh, that's the game. So it's just boring. So a lot of people my age are like turning off and just not really paying attention anymore because we grew up sort of when it was a different way it was played. So it's kind of weird. It's been such a huge part of my life. And now I'm like, I don't know if I want to watch it anymore. Like it's the thing every year. Baseball is what it starts in April and it goes until November. And that's my whole life. And I'm every game watching or paying attention. And now I'm just checking out completely.
How many games of baseball do they play in a season?
162.
Do you feel like that's not enough? Do you feel like that's the problem? That you're just getting a little amuse-bouche, a little taste of baseball. And if they just maybe tripled the amount of games they play, your joy of it would come back.
Yeah, I mean, that's been talked about, that we definitely need a few more games.
In Australian rules football, if you play 162 games, you've had a pretty good career.
By the way, my AFL team is doing great.
So you follow the Greater Western Sydney Giants, yes?
Oh, yeah. Hold on.
Oh, hang on. Hang on. There's movement. Dave's gone into his bunker. He's come back and he's wearing his Giants cap. Yes, look at the Greater Western Sydney Giants, GWS, who are coached by a former Western Bulldogs player, Leon Cameron, who was a Bulldogs champion, one of my favourite players when I was growing up. Leon Cameron, who's the coach of GWS, and they're having a pretty good season, GWS.
Yeah, they're doing quite well. That's why I love them.
Who's your favorite player again?
What?
Who's your favorite player again?
I like the young fella.
Yeah, which one?
Starts with a K.
Yep, sure.
Wait, I'm thinking.
Are you thinking or are you Googling, Dave? That's.
that's right. It's Toronto.
What?
It's Whitfield.
Whitfield. Oh yeah. Okay.
He's great. He's new. Yeah, he's new. He's exciting.
He's not really that new, no. He is exciting.
He's new to me.
He's new to you. well, that is a very Donald Trump way of thinking. That the world doesn't exist until you acknowledge it.
As far as I know, this sport didn't exist until I started watching it this year. Can I just say that at one point, Charlie convinced me to root for St. Kilda. Yeah. And one of the best decisions I have ever made is to follow my heart and follow my Giants.
Have you ever been to Greater Western Sydney? I like You've been to Sydney, but have you ever ventured to the west of Sydney at all?
Do you need to go to the place a team is from to really love it?
No, I don't think so. Who do you follow in the English football?
Manchester United. Never been there.
Yeah, okay. So there you go. You don't, you know, you don't need to go to Manchester to love Manchester United.
I have never been to, I don't even know where it would be. Where, like, where do you live? Is that Eastern Sydney?
Yeah, Eastern suburbs. Yeah, the east. Yeah, that's east.
It's the other way. I've never gone that way.
No, no.
You guys flew to Canberra from Sydney, didn't you? You didn't drive.
Yeah, no.
No, no. So you've never been there. But that's actually good, Dave, because much like most of the players who play for Greater Western Sydney, they don't live there either. So they all live in the eastern suburbs by the beach, where it's real nice. So
is it a beach place?
No, the beach is the eastern suburbs where I live. And so that's where the players live.
What a Western Sydney is the outbackish edge of the.
Well, it's actually where the real it'd be like the valley. Lots of people who, you know, it's a cheaper place to live. Actually, where the majority of the population actually live, you know, like it's actually the heart of where Sydney is. But you know, all the sort of, you know, rich fancy people live by the ocean, so. That's the eastern suburbs, and then the west is real, the heartland, the heartland of Sydney.
Yeah, so I chose really the working man's team. Let's put it that way.
Well, but certainly from the working man's part of the world, yes. So geographically, you've chosen a team that fits your political ideology. Now, the GWS were a created team. Into the competition by the AFL, and they were given everybody else's had to give both draft choices and money to establish the franchise. So essentially, they got all the best young players and were able to pay them all millions of dollars. So not necessarily working class in the way the club was put together, more like an all-stars team of all the best juniors, but certainly geographically, yes.
Well, it's who the working class deserve.
Yeah, that's right. It's the heroes the working class deserve. Yeah, it's like when a big celebrity's making a movie in Canada. Like,
that's right. That's right.
The climate. Let's talk about the climate before we go, because that's...
It's not good. It's really not good. I don't know if you've noticed, but it's not good.
Well, you know what? It's actually cold here today in Melbourne, which is nice because it is the end of May. Normally, it would have got cold 2 months ago. It didn't. Lots of people have been really celebrating that. Lots of people have been going, isn't it great? How amazing the weather is.
I think that just makes me want to lose my mind. Like right now in LA, we've had tons of rain and it's not supposed to rain now. The rain should have stopped 2 months ago. And everyone's like, isn't this great? And you're like, it's not supposed to be happening, so not great.
I put the mic down. I stopped talking. Oh, that's because you went to the bathroom.
That's true. That was my fault. Well, look, really, it was only, you know, look, you just have some off-mic thoughts about the Greater Western Sydney team. It's fine. It's okay. You didn't miss too much. Imagine if someone was like, hang on, there's something wrong with the environment. I missed Dave Wadasa. He wasn't on mic, and I've heard no other news about this environment.
Oh, shit. I think it's going great. We've now moved into massive flooding in the Midwest, which is exciting. The people who thought that nothing would happen and that the coast would burn and then sea level would rise. They didn't realize that climate change means tons of snow that then melts and then their houses are underwater.
It's one of those things where in Australia, where my parents live on their dairy farm, they're having the worst drought of my dad's life, he reckons. Like they've never experienced a drought like it in his entire life, and they've been through some tough ones.
Australia's like known for droughts.
Yeah. And, it's been known for droughts and flooding rains, but we're not getting many of the flooding rains anymore, just the droughts.
Yeah, the droughts, yeah.
And it is one of those things where, like, the way the press tries to paint it is that climate change is like an inner city, latte drinking inner city, you know, sort of issue. Whereas, like, as my dad said, like, you know, it's actually farmers and stuff who can, who see that the weather and the climate is changing, that it actually affects on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, that's right. And I've been, you know, because I'm becoming more involved, I've been hearing more about farmers, and the farmers are like, no, this is fucked up and we need to do something, which is the only thing that gives me hope that the Republicans won't win the next election, is that all those people who everyone thinks is not going to vote that way are going to be like, yeah, we got to do something.
Yeah. Except for the other farmers who are like, yeah, that's why we told you we have the factory farms. They're indoors. They're actually better for the animals. The animals aren't getting rained on all the time. This is better. They like it. They're inside a nice factory, close to the other cows.
God. It's the cool thing about the climate change situation is every day a news story comes out that's more horrifying than the last.
Well, every day. And every day people just ignore it. Did you hear about the Bramble K rat? The Bramble K rat?
Is that the one that went extinct in Australia?
Yeah.
That's the first one, right? And it was just because of climate change, right?
Article for those who don't know. For thousands of years, generations of Melamus rubicola lived and bred on a sandy bank in the Torres Strait known as Bramble K. Sometime between 2009 and 2014, the last of this species died, probably drowned in a storm surge due to climate change.
Wow.
Yeah, so the first official animal to be dead due to climate change and in Australia. So number one, well done.
Yeah, you guys seem like you're on the front lines. That's how it feels watching what's happening.
Oh, well, I mean, for a country that is particularly worried about, you know, people coming by boat and things like that. I mean, firstly, probably just let them come by boat and keep the boats. You might just say, if you could come in by a boat, could you bring a spare boat? Because they're going to be really handy in a couple of years. But secondly, is that the countries around us are the ones that are going to suffer, like, from, you know, already suffering from the effects of the rising oceans. And we're going to have climate change refugees very, very soon. So the idea that, like, not only is the country of Australia going to be affected by it in, like, a physical sense, in that our weather and climate is going to be affected, but, like, yeah, when these small island nations start to go underwater, they're all going to get in boats and come to Australia. Now, I'm not a person who is, like, a, you know, stop the boats person, but if you were, and a lot of people are, it turns out, that's yet another compelling argument for, you know, doing something about climate change.
Yeah, it's the same thing here. You know, we have the quote-unquote caravans of people coming up from Central America, and the reason they're coming up is because they're having the worst droughts they've ever had. All the farms have gone under. They can't grow anything. They're having to eat roots in the jungles, you know, and people in the cities won't take them to, like, they won't take people from the rural areas to the cities because there's too many people in the cities. So they're walking up to the border, and then we put them in concentration camps. It's the same thing, but it's harder to get in a boat, but eventually they'll get in boats.
Anyway, you can understand how this conversation 7 years ago got pretty depressing.
Yeah, but you know, it's crazy that it's not even our conversation, I don't think, was as bad as what's happening.
Look, I think that it's hard to know. What do you think? Do you think that, like, scientists are, because there's two lots of arguments now, one of which is, because I read the IPCC report into climate change. I wrote a whole bit about climate change for my new stand-up show, and I thought, you know, if I was going to do this, I'll read the IPCC report into climate change, and I should not have done that. It has haunted me. Like, it's horrible. It, like, keeps me up at night. Like, I can't stop thinking about it. Like, I'm like, why are they not writing about this? Why not? Like, this is Like I've started. I'm like the final season of Game of Thrones. I'm going to get a petition together to get them to rewrite the IPCC report into climate change into something I can enjoy more because it's terrifying.
You're losing sleep? I didn't think you were one of those people. Yeah, I've been losing sleep for over a year and a half. I wake up in the middle of the night. I can't sleep. I'm terrified because I have a kid, too. And you have nieces and nephews. I don't know if you like them, but it's terrifying to think of the world that these people are going to inherit.
Well, yeah, that's it. I mean, I don't have kids of my own, but yeah, my brother and sister both have kids and I'm quite fond of them all. Like, and, yeah. And like three of the girls have red hair. I mean, they're not going to survive the blazing sun that Australia is going to have on a daily basis. I mean, they're just not equipped for the evolutionary next step.
No, they're completely, completely screwed. Red-haired people should not. They should already be digging tunnels. Well, I would be tunneling if I had red hair.
Just like, forget university. Just learn how to dig. How do you feel about tunnels? Go into tunneling and you just learn anything you can about tunnels. You know what? Let's start with Shawshank. Shawshank's a good way to get into it. You'll like Shawshank, right? And then I'll get you a poster. You can practice at home. And then you know what? There's this guy called, in fact, if anything, we've got to learn from El Chapo. This is a man who, you know, is a master of tunneling. Instead of imprisoning him, we should be actually consulting El Chapo and his people. In fact, if anything, maybe you make a deal with El Chapo and you say, look, we'll let you bring the cocaine into America, but in return, you're going to need to build a series of tunnels and, you know, underground systems so that we can live in.
Can we not have Uncle Will come over for Christmas anymore?
Yep.
His tunnel stories are scary.
Yeah.
Now we know what Elon Musk is doing his tunnels.
Well, that's right, because that train system made no sense, did it? Like, because they measured like how long it would take you and how much it would cost per journey and all these sort of things. But if he's just using it as an elaborate ruse so that he can build some tunnels for his underground... Like, he's got two options, Elon. He's looked at the future and he's gone, I've either got to make it to Mars or I've got to live underground. They are the only two options I have left.
It's 100% true. That's what he's doing. He's going to become a mole person.
I mean, that wouldn't surprise me, actually. Maybe that's why you were so mad about those Thai cave rescuers.
Oh, my God.
You know what I mean? Like, that's what...
So in my mind, we start seeing a lot less food being made in like 10 years, starvation. That's when the people start moving all over the earth. I always thought that I wouldn't live to see the really bad, bad, bad shit. But now I'm like, oh, I'm going to die when it's a nightmare. Like the end of my life is like, I see it. I see it all. Which is a super awful feeling.
Yeah, I'm hopeful that, you know, you'll get murdered by someone who's on the Dollop Reddit forums well before climate change gets you, you know?
Someone from Twitter has to kill me.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, when Trump dies of a heart attack and they blame it on like him being poisoned or whatever, and they, you know, decide to start shooting people, and there's some dude who's just recently burnt his pants will break into your house and murder you.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, just screaming, is because you complained about baseball.
There's
a America's game!
There is a greater chance someone kills me about my baseball opinion than anything else.
Yeah, look, I mean, I still think that, yeah, probably realistically, you know, in the world that I live in and operate in, you know, I'm not going to see, you know, the really, really fucked up stuff. But what we are probably going to see is, well, what we don't know is that point of no return, right?
Yeah,
because everybody treats it like, you know, these targets that we have for Paris and all these sort of things, like somehow it's like a thermostat and that you can just kind of like, well, we got it up to here, but as long as we just dial it back, all the effects of climate change will also dial back. But that's not how the planet works. It's not like, you know, if everybody suddenly reduces their emissions to negative emissions, the Bramble K rat suddenly just pops out of nowhere and goes, here, not even extinct. You fixed it.
I was waiting in my tunnel.
It was just too hot. I've been living underground.
It's just gingers down there.
You guys seen Shawshank?
Elon Musk won't shut up.
The next, well, I wonder if I won't see the worst of it, and I'll be protected from the worst of it because I'm, you know, like in a privileged position in a privileged country. So like those things will protect me from being the sort of person who experiences the worst of it. But I think that within our lifetime, heaps of like millions of other people will experience the worst of it. And then whatever the ongoing sort of ramifications of that on our lives and our worlds will happen. Like, but that's the truth. I mean, there's people who are already experiencing it. You know, there's some people who, for us having a conversation around will we see the disastrous effects of this, is already a privileged conversation, because if you are living, you know, in Bangladesh or whatever, you're already, you know, experiencing, you know, some of the effects of it, and it's only going to get worse in the next 5 years and 10 years. They can't wait for fucking Paris, you know, the Paris Agreement. They're fucked now, and they need shit to be done now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, islands are going away and...
Yeah, but they're being replaced by giant garbage that doesn't... islands, Dave.
The what?
The islands of garbage. So we won't have Bangladesh, but we'll have a giant island of garbage and plastic bags. So it'll be fine.
But you know what? You know what's so fucked about that is they're so not thankful that we're doing that for them.
Your original country is underwater, but you Bangladeshis can live on these Coke bottles. So
yeah, you can float around the whole world now. You're not stuck in one place.
Yeah, exactly. You can just float around on your... on your waste island. Hey, this was fun. We should finish up, but we could do this again, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, this went well. I say this, and then of course, in traditional faux-fop style, something will have gone wrong. There was that brief period where you didn't talk into the microphone, but other than that, I think it went well. That was my fault.
I mean, there was the time. There was that time when a professional comedian put down the microphone and just started talking.
Oh, and professional comedian and podcaster, let's be honest. Somebody who, as I've recently heard, is going to have a lot of time to be podcasting. Forgot.
Yeah.
How to podcast, but that's okay. That is very on brand for this, mate. Well, let's plug the podcast you currently have, The Dollop, of course.
Yes.
Great podcast. And also, your new podcast, The West Wing Thing. Tell me about the fella you do that with. Who is he?
Josh Olson. I met him during the Writers Guild strike in 2008 or something. And he is an Oscar-nominated writer of History of Violence. So he's a screenwriter, and we just started hanging out, and we have the same political sort of opinions and ideas about how things are working. And we have the same opinion about the West Wing, which is that it influenced a lot of people in the wrong way. People in power.
The interesting thing about it, because I, as I've told you, recently rewatched all 7 series of The West Wing in about a week and a half, probably, total.
I cannot imagine that.
Well, look, a lot of it hasn't dated well, it's fair to say. But it's been interesting to listen to you guys, because I think you're both like me in that you both really enjoyed the show when it was first out. And many of the criticisms that you're now making of the show are things that, you know, you're not sitting there going, and I knew this was the case or noticed this was the case when I first watched it, and how smart am I? Some of it is you're rewatching it and going, oh, wow, like this is even, you know, the messaging in this and the kind of themes and the way the themes are presented are, very different to what I imagined this show was and what it was about in the first place.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And I think it was a, you know, now you can look back because everything has changed so much. But at the time, it seemed like a harmless television show. And you didn't realize that people were actually watching it going, this is what we should do.
And look, I will say probably in its defense, they probably didn't set out and go like, this is how people will be. Like, you know, it is also the fault of the people who watched the show and went, much in the same way as they said when The Sopranos was on, that gang, like mafia guys became a lot more mafia again. Because it was a period of time where they like were actually pretty low-key about being in the mafia. Because actually, to be honest, most of the time, it's probably pretty good for people to... for that to be a secret that you're in the mafia.
Yeah, you want to stay a little under the radar on that one.
But apparently when The Sopranos came out, suddenly everybody was like, you know, acting like they were the guys from The Sopranos again. So the West Wing has certainly had that influence on, you know, modern political culture, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny, there's this article in an online a magazine called Current Affairs, called The Obama Boys. And a guy went through and read all of the guys who worked in Obama's White House, all their autobiographies. And he put it all together and it's stunning. My jaw dropped because it's The West Wing.
All right. Well, it's a great podcast. You definitely should listen to it. Josh is fantastic and he manages to keep you from just screaming incoherently.
That's the hardest thing for anybody I do a podcast with.
No, yeah, well, that's what I was saying. It was a real professional admiration. I was like, I beat you, dude. I get it.
You really relate to him.
I can see the red mist taking over your eyes and him having to back slightly away from a point he agrees with but realizes he doesn't agree with quite as much as you've leaned into it. Yeah, no, I've been there. I hear you, Josh. Me and Josh might get together, have a little chat, have a little...
You and Josh and Gareth have a
support group.
Support group, yeah.
Yeah, it's like an Avengers Endgame when Captain America was in his little support group after the snap. That's me and all Dave's co-hosts.
That's right.
Mate, thank you very much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, this is great.
In the old days, you used to do a little do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll just do the classic Fofout.